Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am your host, Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock. And joining me, as always, Alex Jones of the BigSpur.com 24 Sports Network. What's going on, buddy?
What's going on? It's good to be back. I feel like we just talking about football season starting. It feels like just a few shows ago, and now we're here getting ready to talk about baseball season starting already. It's going to be interesting to kind of dive into it with Whittle tonight on the baseball segment, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, very excited to have John Whittle. He's coming on. And John Whittle, also of thebigspur.com. Everybody knows that he is the Gamecock baseball expert. For my money, the best that's ever done it across any sport for Gamecock athletics. John Whittle has his pulse on this baseball program like nothing I've ever seen. So we love when John comes on to give his preview. It's kind of nice, Alex, that it's Monday and schools are in session. Everyone's at work. It feels kind of weird, honestly, to start a work week on time. But before we get John here, let's go ahead and quickly recap the weekend, or at least since we last spoke. Softball is now 5-2 on the season. Don't blink, y'all. Softball plays a lot of games. They've already played 7 of them over the tournament over the weekend. They beat Winthrop 18-0, Binghamton 9-1, Syracuse 15-2, but they did lose both games to Virginia Tech by scores of 8-4 and 9-5. For what it's worth, the Hokies were ranked 19th in the country going into the game. In the latest Softball America poll, the softball team has dropped from 16th to 20th. And again, for what it's worth, the Hokies are now 16th in the nation, according to Softball America. Alex corrected me. 3-2. They played 5 games. Yeah, so again, you blink, man. They might play 2 more and be at 7.
Yeah.
But women's basketball, my gosh, Alex, they clobbered Mississippi State and Tennessee. Both those games were at home, I believe, and 88-45 and 93-50.
And being shorthanded too in that game yesterday, basically having 7 in the rotations with the injuries, that was really impressive.
I think Joyce Edwards is now the fastest women's Gamecock player to ever get to 1,000 points, surpassing Asia Wilson. The women are now 24-2 on the season, 10-1 in SEC play, ranked number 3 in the country, only behind Connecticut and UCLA. They get a little bit of a break, Alex, before they head to the Bayou on Saturday night to face off against number 6 LSU. Malaysia Fulwiley will get to see her former teammates up close and personal, so that'll be an exciting matchup. We got to talk about men's basketball. Men's basketball dropped 2 games, fell to Texas on the road by a score of 84-75. Gamecocks had their chances in that one, and then lost to Missouri in a game where got down by a lot, fought back, got close, could never really get over the hump, and lost 78-59. They were outscored 44-29 at home in the second half. And next, they'll have another week off too, just like the women. They will face off against Alabama and Tuscaloosa on Saturday. But Charles Bediako will not be playing in that game. The judge in Tuscaloosa finally came to their senses and said this kid should not be playing college basketball. That is huge, guys. That is really big because we did not need the sport to go that route. I was talking to high school coaches throughout the state of South Carolina. And at this point, if Charles Bediako was going to be eligible, they said, what's the point? What's the point of trying to get high school kids into college?
That was going to open Pandora's box. And you're already seeing that with Najee at Baylor. I mean, that's already happening. But now the Bediako news, maybe that kind of slows this or just stops it completely.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think Ace Bailey, who played at UCLA, was trying to play as well. Yeah. Come on, just have some pride, y'all. Have some pride. You had your opportunity. You're getting paid somewhere. Go play basketball for money and don't take opportunities away from young men and women. Baseball kicks off this Friday. The Gamecocks will host Northern Kentucky. First pitch is 4 p.m. at Founders Park. And we're going to talk plenty of baseball on this show because we have John Whittle, as we mentioned off the top. So let's get ready for John. Let's dive right into the Late Night Gamecock Show.
Gonna turn on the late night show. Hear what's going down in Cooltown. I said I'm turning on late night show. cocks will let me down.
Welcome back into the Late Night Gamecock Show. Now it's time to bring in John Whittle of thebigspur.com and 247sports.com. John, how you doing?
Gentlemen, great to see you. Happy to be back on the Late Night Gamecock Show with you guys.
Well, we're pumped to have you, John. This is one of our favorite episodes of the year. Alex, what were you going to say to your boss?
Oh, I was saying glad to have you back.
No, it's good to be here. Good to be here. And hopefully folks haven't gotten tired of me yet. I spent about an hour and a half on the show with Jamie this morning. So hopefully people aren't turning off. Hopefully they're tuning in.
There you go. Well, John, I had no idea you were on the show with JP today or scheduled to when I asked you to do this, but we'll try to ask some different questions.
We're great. I love doing this every year and looking forward to the conversation tonight.
So we got a bunch of questions. We did send them to John in advance. That does not mean that Alex isn't going to throw some curveballs at you. And look, I know John is usually pretty good about, you know, getting to questions that are in the chat box. We'll try and fit as many of those in as we can because I know that everyone's excited for baseball season. John, we'll throw you a softball to start. Look at that curveball, softballs. I'm doing a good job tonight. John, you've been around a lot of Gamecock baseball preseasons, and I don't think anyone covers South Carolina as well as you, or, you know, covers any school for that matter, as well as you cover South Carolina baseball. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate this preseason as far as ready to play based against past preseasons? I kind of let you take it anywhere you want to go.
Well, in an effort to be able to get through everything, I'll be succinct. How about that? Well, I'll try to turn over a new leaf. I can start rambling. So, you know, I would say probably around a 6 is, you know, if I'm putting things on a scale of 1 to 10, and just to put it into context a little bit, you know, I say that just based on like what I see out there from a talent level standpoint. Of how guys are playing, like the guys you need to play well versus, you know, there are guys on the team that you don't need to be very good, right? Like your young guys, your freshmen, your guys who are back, who, you know, are going to be backups, like are the right guys playing well, right? Like, you know, there are a lot of things that go into it. And, you know, there's some things I'm pretty comfortable with. There's some things I'm not very comfortable with. And I know we'll get into some of those throughout, but you know, I wouldn't go into this season saying that I feel great about what I watched, you know, these last 3 weeks of, you know, in the build up to the season. There's some things that are encouraging, some things that are positive, but I don't know that I feel like I've got a whole lot of great answers to the questions that, you know, we have from the off season.
Well, what are those things you feel comfortable or were encouraged about that you saw in scrimmages and have learned about the team?
Yeah, I mean, I feel great about KJ Scobie. You know, there are a lot of questions about him over the summer and into the fall. Like, how's he going to transition over to that shortstop position? You know, what's his – you know, we talk about how great he was last year, and he was in a lot of ways. But, you know, he hit about 250 overall in the season and about 225 – I'll have the numbers right in front of me in SEC play. Like, that's not good enough. Like, how can you make a jump offensively? How's the switch over to shortstop going to be? Cause there's a lot of pressure on being an SEC shortstop that goes with it. Are you going to carry your bat to the field with you or vice versa? And I think he's handled things great. And that's one thing that I really feel good about. You know, I feel good about, you know, Tyler Bach out in center field. Yeah, and just to speak more broadly on the team and not just go player by player just yet, but I think I feel pretty good about the fact that most of these guys have shown some pretty good plate awareness and are swinging at pitches they should be swinging at, letting pitches go that they should be letting go. I feel like there's a better plate discipline there right now than there was, you know, especially towards the end of last season. You know, they're being coached a little bit differently right now. So that's one thing I feel pretty good about. And then broadly from a pitching standpoint, you know, I feel pretty good about – I feel as good as I think I could when you lose a guy like Jake McCoy and then have a guy like Alex Philpott, you know, go down for what's – I mean, not for the whole season, but it's probably going to be for about the first month of the season, and that's not a short period of time. I mean, if he's out 4 weeks, that's 4 out of 14. I mean, you're that's about, what, 20% of the season? Alex, do the math on that for us.
Math is not my strong suit. Don't ask me to do that.
You know, there's some pitchers who have performed better in the preseason than they did in the fall that I'm encouraged by, too.
That's interesting you bring that up, John. This is kind of off script, but, you know, fall to preseason, you know, baseball is, I mean, it's year round all over the country, starting at a young age. But, you know, in the fall, like, how hard is it for players to carry that over to preseason or vice versa?
Well, I mean, the preseason is obviously more important. In the fall, you're working on a lot of different things. Like, you know, you might be working on a new pitch or improving one pitch from another. You may be working on some things mechanically. You may be changing up your batting stance or tweaking your batting stance a little bit. You may be trying some different things from a defensive standpoint, whether it's, you know, something is, you know, is simple as moving from one position to another, or something seemingly minute as just kind of hand placement and getting ready. So like there's so much that goes on in the fall. That's more about trying to improve your game individually and trying to find what works best. So having a bad fall or having a great fall doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be great or bad during the season. Like the preseason is when you go out and got to execute and perform to what, you know, you've been working on. And having yourself be the best that you can possibly be as an individual. So, you know, there's two different focuses, you know, in the fall versus the preseason. And I think some of these guys are better than what they were, and some are still trying to find their way a little bit.
You got the news pretty recently about Jake McCoy being out for the season. Obviously, that's a huge blow from a pitching staff standpoint. But from when they announced the rotation, what do you think about the rotation that was announced? And kind of specifically with Riley Goodman, what do you really like about him?
Yeah, I mean, on the starting rotation, I've been a big fan of Riley for a long time and said all throughout last year, hey, this guy is really going to be one to watch going forward. Like he was that good in my eyes. And that's kind of come to fruition a little bit. Now, ideally, you wouldn't want him to be your Friday night guy to open the season. Like, he's got Friday night stuff, but he hasn't thrown a collegiate pitch yet. And, you know, there are some things that he can be a little bit erratic with his command from time to time. So, you know, you don't necessarily want to put a freshman out there who can be a little bit erratic at times and you know, say, go get him. But that's what they're going to do. And I get it because he's got Friday night stuff. And sometimes you got to kind of grow in the role in the moment. So, you know, Riley's electric. I mean, he'll be up to 97, maybe 98. I know 99 has been floating around, but I think that was a little bit of a misread on the radar gun down at a minor league ballpark down in Charleston. So, but 96, 97 is humping it up there pretty good. And, you know, he's got a great slider and his changeup works. So, you know, he's got Friday night stuff, and I think he can grow into that role and handle it. I wouldn't look for smooth sailing for, you know, 14 outings, but, you know, he'll look good out there. And then Amp Phillips on Saturday, like, you know, he's probably the guy you look at and say, well, he's a little bit more steady. You know what you're going to get. He's been in a starting role in a collegiate rotation before. You know, he performed well on a big stage in the regional round against Clemson or up at Clemson. And you would feel good about that. But, you know, you know maybe a little bit more about him. And there are good things about that on Saturday too. So I feel good with him. And then Sunday, like, when you lose Jake McCoy for a long time, or for the season, and you lose his experience, you know, even though he wasn't great last year, had a 7 ERA, you lose all those SEC innings. Alex Philpott, you lose for probably a month. You lose all those SEC innings he's thrown. You look at your first two starting pitchers. It's like, I understand why they go with Brandon Stone. Like, they want to go with a guy who's been in those wars before. And I know Northern Kentucky is not SEC, but he's got SEC experience. He knows what it's like to pitch at Founders Park. He knows what it's like to throw the lights on. Do you want to throw three guys out there who don't? I get going with Brandon Stone right now. We'll see how he does. Like, he's different this year than last year in some ways. You know, he's in better shape, improved himself a little bit. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. And it didn't really surprise me that his name got back into the mix, especially once those two guys went down. And you know, he's been pretty solid, you know, in the build up to the season too.
Hey, we'll find this out pretty early, but who do you feel like are some of the midweek options for this team from a starting standpoint?
Well, I think Bradley Hodges is going to go next Tuesday, the transfer from Virginia. And, you know, that's not something that somebody's telling me. That's just kind of reading some context clues. But I feel like that's a pretty safe bet right now. The team will scrimmage tomorrow for four innings, starting at 3:00. That'll be their last scrimmage. And Bradley will be starting on the mound for one of those teams. And I anticipate him going four. So you know, there's most weeks they're only going to have one midweek game, and so we'll see. But other options, especially for that opening weekend, you know, you look at a Logan Prisco from Flodar. Paul Maneri has mentioned him. Connor Ciccoli, who was great on Saturday out of the bullpen. You know, he pitched against the starters, struck out six guys in three innings, so really showed out pretty well then. He's not an overpowering guy. He was 88, 89 on most of his fastballs and was able to carve right through South Carolina's lineup. So, you know, you can take that one way or the other. Connor Ciccoli's really good, or the hitters really aren't.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are a couple of guys I circled. Alex Valentin is another. But I think he's probably going to piggyback off of Amp Phillips on Saturday. Josh Gunther is going to piggyback off of Riley Goodman on Friday. So I think those guys will be probably on the weekend in some capacity, but, you know, maybe a Logan Prisco or a Connor Ciccoli.
You know, Widow, last year I remember asking you, what are you concerned about? What are you worried about? And you said up the middle. You said catcher, short, second, all the way back to center field, I think. But when you lose, you know, what they lost at catcher the year before, and I'm blanking on is Cole Messina. I mean, yeah, you're going to have a little bit of a drop off there, right? And especially when you look it up the middle. Is that something that you're worried about this year? You mentioned Scobie as a guy that's made a jump and playing shortstop. You have the transfer second baseman who I think was a preseason All-American the other day. How are you feeling up the middle right now? Because it's still going to be Talmadge LaCroix behind home plate for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and, you know, there were some concerns up the middle because you have guys who hadn't really done it before, you know, whether it was Jordan Carrion or you know, Talmadge LaCroix behind the plate, and you wonder how Henry Kazmur is going to look, you know, coming down from Ohio State. Nate Hall was, you know, a fourth outfielder or fifth outfielder for Clemson, and, you know, he's got all the tools, but can he put it all together? If he couldn't at Clemson, are you sure he's going to be able to do it at South Carolina? There was some pedigree and there's some skill there. You know, I do have some similar concerns. I mean, I did point out KJ Scobie, but I feel really good about Tyler Bach in center. You know, his credentials at Wofford were pretty strong, and he's looked good throughout the fall and most of the preseason. He started out a little slow, but he's picked it up a little bit here lately. And, you know, his swing is too good. He's too athletic. Like, I think he's going to be fine. You know, second base and catcher are still kind of a concern for me. I mean, I do think Talmadge LaCroix is in a pretty good position, you know, going into the year. He's played well. You know, he's not going to be an elite guy. And I think Talmadge is in position to have a solid senior season and solid final season at South Carolina and in college baseball. Like, I don't think he's going to be an elite catcher. I don't think he's going to be a 3 or 4 hole hitter, but I think you put him in the 6th spot or 7th spot in the batting order, let him go out and do his thing. And I think he'll be productive there. You know, I think he can control the run game well enough. I think he can handle the pitchers well enough. Like, I don't think he's going to be a drag on the team. I think he's going to help the team be successful. Now, he's not going to be atop the team in RBIs. He's not going to be atop the team in batting average. But he's going to be – if South Carolina's good, South Carolina is going to probably look at Talmadge LaCroix in that catcher position as one that's been really upgraded from last year. So I feel like he's in a good position right now to be the best that he can be in his final year. And second base, like Logan Sutter, he put up some great numbers at Purdue. And I understand, I think he was fourth team All-American, if I'm not mistaken. I understand why he's getting that kind of love, and you know, Paul Maneri's put him in the starting lineup, and I get that. Like, he was kind of one of the headline recruits in the transfer portal class. He hadn't done anything since he's been here. Like, I mean, there's no other way to say it. He has not played well, at least offensively. Now, I can see a big difference from where he was defensively from the start of the fall until now. You know, I've locked in on him a little bit, watching in and out and practice pregame. And I think he's improved tremendously from a defensive standpoint. So credit to him for that. But, you know, maybe he's just a gamer. Maybe when the lights come on, like, the bat's going to come. But the bat hadn't come yet. He hadn't produced at all. So we'll see how that second base position is going. Like, nobody else has stepped up to claim it from him. And so roll with the guy you got.
I totally get that. And, you know, talking about batting, you know, one of the things that JB asked me the other day, he said, Matt, if you can just use one word or phrase to describe what you want to see out of this baseball team this year, I said situational hitting. I just feel like it's been kind of lacking over the past couple of years, where you get a runner on second, you get a runner on third, maybe you have two on first and, you know, runners at the corners, and just like pushing those runs across in big time SEC series has been difficult for the Gamecocks in this way or that way. But, you know, this offensive strategy this year, and SEC is a bear. We know that. We know that the Gamecocks are down their Friday night guy. You know, what's that strategy going to be? And like, is this going to be where you need X amount of runs to feel like you're in the game and, you know, four ain't going to cut it most weekends?
Well, I don't really have a run total on average that you got to hit, but you know, I just from an offensive standpoint is hard to answer, because you know, and I don't say this in favor of one over the other, because I think both things can be, you know, successful if you have the right people. But Paul Maneri and Monty Lee's, they're some of their philosophies, not all of them, but some of their philosophies aren't really aligned. Like, Monty is a guy who is very strict and being disciplined at the plate. Like, he wants you swinging at strikes and works really, really hard with those hitters to recognize the strike zone and pitches in and out of it and plate discipline. And, you know, if a ball's 2 or 3 inches off the plate, he doesn't want you swinging at it. He wants the umpire to make the right call, put the faith in the umpire to make the right call. You don't chase that, because you're probably not going to hit it anyway. Like, it's hard enough to hit pitches that you can do something with in the strike zone. Like, it's even harder when you're chasing pitches out of it. So, you know, he wants you to swing at pitches in the zone. And the umpires have gotten better in a lot of ways too, especially with the TrackMan out there and them holding them accountable. So strike zones have gotten better, but you know, Paul wants you protecting. He wants you fighting off pitches. He wants you aggressive. You know, and those things don't always line up.
Is that a pitch count thing? Trying to get the pitcher's pitch counts up or make them work for it?
Not so much. It's just more about just getting pitches you can hit, because it's so hard to hit in general. Like, the pitcher's got every advantage in the world. Like, it's so hard to hit. Like, they want you swinging at good pitches and pitches that you know you can hit, right? And sometimes you eliminate – some hitters, like, eliminate the top half of the zone because you can't hit pitches up there. You want to see it down, or vice versa. So, you know, it's so much more plate discipline approach and just that kind of deal with Monty than it is with Paul. And – he wants you being aggressive, and you know, Paul's talked openly about not liking walks. You know, we're not here to watch you walk. We want you to swing the bat. We want the ball in play. And I get that too. So, but you got to have the right hitters, regardless of what you do. You got to have the right hitters for whatever philosophy you're going to employ. So you know, when I watch these teams or this team in scrimmages, I see more Monty than I do Paul. And, you know, we'll see how that evolves over the course of the year. And if it evolves, you know, if it looks one way to start the year and changes, then that's probably a sign that things aren't going well.
Yeah.
Well, I know they got Northern Kentucky this week and then the Salute the Troops week and the next weekend after that. But everybody's already going to be talking about the Clemson series. From what you know about Clemson and what you know about Carolina, how well positioned or maybe not positioned are Carolina in that series, do you think?
Yeah, I haven't done a huge deep dive on Clemson yet, but I do know that it's going to be – I do know enough to know that it's going to be really challenging. And I will say that I think that the Clemson series is always important, but I think it takes on a just completely different level of importance this year, both from a baseball standpoint and a just entire athletics department standpoint, right? Like,
yeah,
we're not in the best of times right now in Gamecock athletics. I don't think I'm breaking any news on that. Got a couple of bad basketball seasons in a row, maybe the worst baseball season ever in program history last year. Football season falls way below expectations. It feels like Gamecock fans are getting gut punched left and right. And, you know, I've always said, whether teams are good or not, I've always said that Clemson series determines so much about kind of the fringy fan base. Like, there's some baseball fans out there who will follow the team more closely. You know, when you win that Clemson series, okay, you beat Clemson. I'm on board. Like, let's go. And then if you don't, they check out a little bit. You kind of got to win them back. And with the way this season went last year, and with that more so than you know, the entire athletics program, just the way things went last year, I think you're already trying to win people back. And, you know, that Clemson series would be a big part of it. Great if you beat Gardner-Webb, and great if you sweep Northern Kentucky, and great if you sweep the military weekend. You did that last year. You're also 4-24 in the SEC and lost every game to every ACC school. Let's see you do something against, you know, a good competition. So, you know, fair or unfair to these players, because it's 25, 26 new guys. You only got 10 guys coming back from last year. Like, fair or unfair to them, you know, I think this series is hugely important, and that's not something that I usually say.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because I think it just in talking to Gamecock fans and even, you know, Gamecock supporters that I've known personally for a while, I don't think many people that root for the Gamecocks can name more than 5 or 6 guys on the roster this year. So I think that, you know, it's going to be new for everybody, and not just the players that are playing that Clemson series. But are there any names that Gamecock fans, and you've named a bunch of them already, but maybe storylines or guys that might – everyone's going to know their name at the end of the season?
Whew, I mean, shoot, there's a lot of new.
You don't have to go name by name. I
mentioned Tyler Bach. He's a newcomer that kind of jumps off the page to me. Patrick Evans is one that folks should probably know. Like, he could play anywhere. Like, they've started him in games in these scrimmages at first base. He started second base. I don't know if he started short. He can play short. Started third base, started in left field, started in right field, has caught some innings. Like, you can see him anywhere. Where he is to start the season, I think he'll probably start in right field. But he you can see him anywhere. From an offensive standpoint, you know, he reminds me in some ways a little bit of Braylon Wimmer. He's long, athletic, he's fast. You know, and I think he's going to play a little bit like Braylon Wimmer too, from an offensive standpoint. Like, he's a guy who, and I've said this before, he's a guy who can go out there and go 4 for 5 and have, you know, 3 doubles and 6 RBIs. And like, that's what you see. And then the next day he's 0 for 5 with 3 strikeouts. Like he's that kind of player. He's a little bit streaky, but he's just so crazy athletic. He's fast. He does a lot of things really well. And, you know, Braylon Wimmer got more consistent as his career went along, and Patrick Evans will probably do the same. But, you know, and they even wear the same number, actually. That's one guy who jumps off the page to me from a position player standpoint. You know, somebody who jumps out at me is, you know, somebody we may not be talking about, but has looked pretty good. from a pitching standpoint. I think Alex Valentin has kind of stepped up his game a little bit here in the preseason. He's looked good. He's another one of those guys who is he's one of those effectively wild kind of guys. He's one who will get himself into trouble, but does a hell of a job of getting himself out of trouble too. So those guys make you kind of live on the edge of your seat a little bit. But he's been good. And you know, Reese Moore is another position player. Dawson Harmon is another position player. Dawson for sure. Like, he's probably your starter at third base. He could end up in the middle of the order. He's going to strike out some, but he's going to get some out of the yard too.
Well, I think it's exciting when you can have a new team coming off a poor season, and you know, a season that Gamecock fans on the diamond are not really accustomed to. Well, John, I can't let you leave without asking you the question that's on everybody else's mind. How confident are you the Gamecocks make their way back to the NCAA tournament this year? And I'm not going to ask you about hosting a regional. That would make Gamecock Garrett in the chat box happy. But think the Gamecocks make it back this year?
Well, I'll answer Gamecock Garrett anyway. I don't think South Carolina is going to be hosting a regional. That would take me really off guard. I'd be really surprised if that came to pass. You know, I felt like South Carolina is a regional team. That was before Jake McCoy went down. That was before Alex Philpott started having some things. You know, if you get Alex Philpott back in a month, like I'd still feel okay about it. But the build up to the season has not been like crazy encouraging for me in terms of feeling good about, you know, saying this is an NCAA tournament team. And, you know, part of that is just because the league is so good. Like, South Carolina was picked 15th in the league by D1 baseball and the league's coaches. Like, you're not getting this isn't going to be like the SEC basketball, you know, 2 years or last year when 14 out of 16 teams made the tournament. Like, that's just not the way it is. You know, the league will probably get 10 teams and 11 teams. You're talking about playing past, you know, four or five other teams. And I don't know that that's going to happen this year. And I don't know. I haven't sat down and written my full predictions yet. That usually comes out on Thursday. I don't know which way I'm going to go in terms of making the postseason or not. You know, I've been leaning towards yes, but I can't swear that that's what I'm going to write on Thursday. I'm not 100% sure I'm going to write down that I think South Carolina is going to make a regional. I'm leaning towards that way right now, but neither one would surprise me. Is very much up in the air for this team, I think.
Well, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I was just going to say one more before we let you run. This weekend, outside of wins and losses, what are you watching for? What's the one thing you want to see coming out of this weekend for South Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I think just from a pitching standpoint, it's execution, and from a position player standpoint, it's just playing with discipline and making the right plays. Like, you know, there was so much that went wrong last year that was just kind of a failure, on-field failure of execution, just across the board. And, you know, Northern Kentucky, I think y'all have been paying attention long enough to know that it's been snowing a lot up there, and they probably hadn't been outside playing much baseball. They've been inside playing some baseball, and you know, there's an opportunity there for them to come in and win some games and put up a good performance. But, you know, South Carolina should be able to beat this team. And for me, it's more just about execution on what you're doing. Like, Riley Goodman needs to go out and throw strikes and challenge those guys to hit the 96 mile an hour fastball. And Ant Phillips needs to challenge these guys to hit his slider. And, you know, Logan Sutter needs to put the ball in play and see if the ball are finding holes, because he's been striking out too much. Like just seeing clean baseball, I think, would be a nice step in the right direction, because so much last year we just didn't see good, clean baseball. And when you're playing a team that, you know, has hardly been outside, like, you should be in a really good position to go out there and win games when you play the game the right way. And I just kind of want to see that.
Well, John, you are the best for doing this. You're the best at what you do. We thank you so much. We're not going to hold your feet to the fire on this, on anything you've said today. We know it's just what you've seen, and you're as honest as the day is long. So we appreciate it. And looking forward to seeing you at Founders a couple times this year. Make sure you keep Alex straight. We need at least 100 articles a day, anything less than that, and yeah, we're all disappointed.
Yeah. Well, I apologize for not being very succinct, as I promised I would at the start. So I failed. Give me an F. But it was good chatting with you guys anyway.
Yeah, man. Well, you have a good night, and we'll see you soon, my friend.
Appreciate you guys. Talk to you soon.
All right. So, Alex, after talking to John, like I said, I always appreciate him coming on because he's so honest, and you're not going to find that many other places. I think my takeaway from this is, you know, the goal is to make the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially after having the season that you had last season, like that's got to be the benchmark in year two for Paul Mainieri. Like, it's just, especially with the tradition, the history of the program, like that's your, I mean, you know, you could argue hosting a regional could be the benchmark, but they've got to find a way to make the NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, and I'll be excited to watch Friday night. Like John mentioned, there's so many new guys on the roster. We're going to have to be learning the names right there with you guys, and hopefully the Gamecocks give Gamecock fans something to cheer about, because the men traveling to Alabama, the women potentially facing a tough team in LSU, that they've kind of had LSU's number lately. Gamecock fans, softball is going to be there. They need some wins to get back going, off the mat. But we're going to take a quick sponsor break. When we come back, as promised, we're going to have a little bit of a Lamont Paris conversation. Justin Lyles of sportscapvalue.com will be joining us, and we'll also get some of our basketball picks for this week. So stick around, y'all. Stay tuned.
Morning, Carl. Usual?
Yeah.
Your oldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
You might as well give me one of those Carolina cars while you're at it.
I knew I liked that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, Freddy.
You bet.
J.C. Sherbert here. Had a brilliant idea that some good friends of mine in Florence have told me about. Next time you're having a wedding or an event or anytime you got to feed a bunch of people, talk to my friends over at Flavortown Eats and Events. That's right. It's a food truck / trailer. Prepares the food fresh on site right there for you. No hassle. It's absolutely delicious. They'll come out. Turnkey solution to feed the masses at your event. Go to their website right now. FlavortownFlow.com. That's FlavortownFlow.com. They have all the contact information you need, and they are a proud sponsor of the Late Night Gamecock Show and the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton, and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
This is the Late Night Gamecock Show with the pride of Hampton County, Alex Jones. And with the king of late night, Matt Anderson. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome back into the Late Night. Golly. Welcome back into the Late Night Gamecock Show. I'm your host, Matt Anderson, and joining me as always is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com.
You okay? We're gonna
bring, what's up, Alex?
You okay? We're only 40 minutes in.
He did tongue-tied tonight, I swear. But We're going to go ahead and bring Justin Lyles of sportscapvalue.com in here. We got a lot to get to with Justin. Man, Justin, I think I can talk, but I'm not sure.
Hey, you got a Super Bowl hangover like I do? I get it, man. I get it.
I don't know if I can even say this, but I did not partake in any Beveraginos last night. I watched that. Just stayed in the zone, you know?
I hear you. Yeah. What's going on, boys?
How you doing? Man. We're still cold, but we're not snowy or iced in, so which that's nice.
Yeah. Things are on the upswing.
Well, we're going to get to the Super Bowl here in a minute. And Justin, I feel bad because you are not prepared for this segment, but we're going to bring you into it anyway. We all know you're a basketball head. You watch all the Gamecocks basketball games. Alex and I have been talking a lot about this very subject and this the team in general. But I'm going to start off by just giving you some statistics, and we can take it wherever you want to go from there. So bear with me. It's going to be a little bit, but it's just Lamont Paris. He's the topic of conversation with Gamecock fans. Is it time to make a change? Should we see it through? There's a $10 to $12 million buyout, depending on how you read the language of the contract. That buyout would honestly be, based on my research, which I've done pretty deep dive on, it would definitely be a top 15 college head basketball coach buyout of all time. I want to say it'd be in the top 5 to 7. So it is not, it's not an insignificant amount of money, and it's not an insignificant amount of money as it relates to college basketball. But here's some statistics for you. So Lamont Paris SEC record, including the SEC tournament, is 22-47. So 22-47. So we have a 69 game sample size. His winning percentage is 31.8% in SEC play. Taking out the magical season 2 years ago where the Gamecocks won 14 games in two plus seasons, taking that season out, he's 8-41 in SEC games for a winning percentage of 16.3%. Going to give you guys some raw numbers, and I'm just letting y'all know it's really not pretty. So Paris has 22 SEC wins. 13 of them are by single digits. 9 of them are in the 11 to 19 point range. He's never beaten an SEC team by 20 plus points. Of his 47 losses, 22 of them are by single digits. 9 are between 11 and 19 points. And he has 16 losses by 20 plus points. And 5 of those have been 40 point losses. And 4 of those have been 30 point losses. So take all that for what it's worth, but those are the numbers.
Yeah. You want me to chime in here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Justin.
Yeah. This is a disaster. It's inevitable. The buyout thing, I think that's what you kind of hit on at the beginning. Yes, it's a big number. But at the end of the day, are the fans showing up? My guess is probably not. I mean, I'm a diehard basketball fan, and I honestly have been so disappointed. I didn't even turn the game on Saturday. I was literally watching golf, the Waste Management, and I was like, should I switch it over to the 1 p.m. tip-off? And I was like, nah. I've been on this earth 38 plus years, and that might be the first time I've ever done that. And so I didn't watch a single – minute of it Saturday. So
well, Alex is there covering it.
Yeah, so I feel for you, Alex. And that's the thing, is like the buyout, getting back to the buyout, yeah, it is a bunch of money, but maybe they can negotiate a complete, you know, however that goes, but you know, behind closed doors and with the board of trustees, maybe they negotiate something and get, so they can get somebody else. And the reason I point to that is, well, first of all, I want to say that, you know, Paris is a great guy, and he's the way he talks and stuff, I've heard his sound bites, I think he's great, you know, and I just don't know that that's resonating with these players, maybe this day and age, or maybe it's not the right players at all for that matter. But when it comes to the buyout again, the NCAA tournament, I've hit on this before, the NCAA tournament makes so much money, billions with a B, and that money has got to be when we've got a chance to grab some of that money to help the basketball program and other sports programs at this university, you have to spend the money for that buyout and try to turn this thing around where you're in the running every single year for the NCAA tournament. Anything less is selling this fan base short.
Alex, throw it over to you.
Yeah, I mean, especially I think that goes even more to that point that it's a revenue sport. I mean, it's one of the revenue sports for South Carolina. Just got to get it figured out. And, you know, to Matt's point on, you know, just some of the losses and how they've racked up being a 40-point, 30-point loss, I think that's something where the losing is one thing that happens, but then just to not be competitive in so many games. I mean, you just – in this Missouri game, too, there are times where they're competitive, but Missouri pulled 16 offensive rebounds in this game, which turned into 16 second chance points, and they really just ran away with it in that game. So I like I said, I think that, you know, just with the way losses are racking up, that's one thing, but just not being competitive in some of these games, it's just, and then even in a game like Texas where you have it you know, in a winnable type of thing, you can't pull rebounds in like a key part of the game. So I think it's just the competitiveness and things like that, it's just not there right now.
I agree with you. And look, you know, I bring up the buyout and I talk about where that would rank all time for really one reason. In the era of NIL, free transfer, those buyout numbers are going to get smashed in the next 5 to 7 years because the fans are going to expect winning, because you can go handpick, you can blue chips it if you want to. Like, you can do whatever you want to do. And the amount that college basketball coaches are getting paid right now, number one, and number two, the ability to flip your roster each and every year, there's not going to be a lot of fans that are willing to go support a team that's losing the way that it is losing right now. Look, I feel like a single-digit loss is a couple possessions in a game. But the problem is you don't have enough on your resume to say, well, I'm winning those single-digit games too. Like, that's the thing that's right. Bothersome to me when – you know, you're talking about maybe 40 to 50% of games you're competitive in. Like, that's kind of scary when you look at the talent level of the SEC. I mean, the flip side of this is 2 years ago, Lamont Paris was the SEC coach of the year, did something completely magical. So, and I said this on the bigspur.com, I think there are a million good, pure basketball coaches out there. I can tell you for a fact, when my brother played college basketball, the smartest guy in the room was often the assistant coach. He was drawing plays up. Like, but to be a head coach, you have to, one, acquire talent each and every year. You have to see the weaknesses on your roster, go address it. You have to develop the talent that stays, and you need to manage egos, and you don't need to be managing money. And I'm not saying Lamont Paris is doing that. He's not. I'll be very blunt with you. He's not managing the money on a day-to-day basis. But you have to go find, like, what football is doing now with the GM. And, like, a true GM that says, what do you want? I will go watch all the college basketball that's played throughout the year. I'll track everybody going to the portal. Because the Gamecocks not only need good basketball players, they need good athletes. And right now, South Carolina is getting out-athleted just every time they step on the court, from the front court to the guards. And then you talk about basketball ability. Like, basketball, you have to be athletic to play it. That's why Justin and I didn't play college basketball. Like, we were okay. Justin was better than me. But, you know, I was never going to go play college basketball with my athleticism, ever. And I could shoot crap out the ball, but that didn't matter. And the Gamecocks have to maximize that yin and yang, right, where you have to find that. And right now, it's two straight years they haven't found it.
And Matt, if I may add real quick.
I know I gave you buckets, Justin, I know. But what were you going to add?
I threw up a few threes every now and then. But I was going to add, you know, based on can you see it with your own eyes when you look at other teams? Like, when you look at our team, like you said, the size is not there. The athleticism is not there. And your eyes can just read what's going on. And then when you see what's being backed up with, like, the Florida game last week, that's just inexcusable. Somebody's got to step up and hit somebody in the face and go out there and say, you know what, we're not losing by 40 points. We're not losing by 20 points. But they may be better than us on the court. But at the end of the day, we're going to grind it out. And Alex hit on that earlier. It was a really good point. It's like, if you're not putting up a fight, at the end of the day, he's responsible for all of that. So,
yeah. So I gave you all the numbers. You know, the things that I think about is, you know, not enough athleticism to consistently compete. G.G. Jackson was an elite talent in year one, and G.G. put up numbers. Still wasn't enough. Colin Murray Boyles is a lottery pick. It wasn't enough. It's just the entire cast needs to improve. I mean, you wonder where the point guard is with Trey. Trey was talking about last week. You know, how did Cam Scott go from a guy that got to the final cuts on the under 19 USA basketball team to being redshirted as a sophomore? All these questions need answers. And look, I don't know which way it's going to go. I'm probably not going to keep bringing up these statistics every episode because you all can see with your eyes what the numbers just proved out. But it's definitely a situation to monitor. So we'll move away from basketball. We got to get sports cap value expert Justin Lyles in. Justin, I know that you hit your the main bets for the Super Bowl with the under 45.5 and the Seahawks minus 4.5. I know you probably just went to sleep at some point in the second quarter when you realized the under was in the bag. But how did your props go, man? Because you gave us a lot of props and they were a lot of fun.
Up and down. Smith Nigma. I think that's how you pronounce it. Forgive me if I pronounce it wrong. Jigma. Yeah. I won't say Enigma for some reason. It must be the nerd in me or something. So I had him under on catches and receiving yards. Obviously, I think he had an ankle injury or something, so that worked out. I missed on Walker. Obviously, he had a great game. They had a great game plan. With the Seahawks, just keep running it, and New England really didn't have an answer for it. So, and then I had some few just fun props I put in there, like the coin toss. I missed on that, which is just a fun thing. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, up and down for Super Bowl. Not the best Super Bowl I think we can all agree we've ever witnessed. So, yeah. But
did you do the Gatorade color?
What's that?
Did you do the Gatorade color?
No, was it yellow? I think is what it was.
I think it was yellow. Yeah,
I think I saw them mixing it or something. I think correctly. But kind of recapping the game, I just thought that, you know, New England's defense played very well, and just New England just didn't seem to. They couldn't make an adjustment on offense. It seemed like they were trying to get made more into the pocket so he could throw it down the field. I didn't quite understand that considering their O-line was just getting ran right over. So I thought they would have kind of threw some quick outs more often or at least kept the defense a little more off balance from guessing perspective. But I don't know. Maybe they were trying to make adjustments and just couldn't do it anyway. But I didn't see New England coming back. I thought there was a little bit of a spurt there on the third, but not after that defensive touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of funny things from last night. So one of my buddies sent me a meme, and it was like the Scooby-Doo, like when they take the mask off, and it had like the mask that said Super Bowl 60. And then when they took the mask off, it was like NFL, Thursday Night Football.
Yeah.
It kind of seemed like that. And then I had another person say that because Vegas pretty much took it on the head with Seattle covering the 4.5 pretty easily and the under as well, that when they showed the yellow Gatorade, someone texted me and said, if that Gatorade is not yellow in 1.5 minutes, Vegas made a phone call to make their money back. but yeah, I mean, Super Bowls are fun. And last night, you know, might not have been the best offensive game, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, I like a defensive grinded out. And I thought the Patriots had chances. You know, I texted some friends and said, look, y'all, I mean, if they get a touchdown here, this is NFL script written all over it, and it's going to be, you know, a game in the last 4 minutes where either the Seahawks got to keep the ball or the Patriots get it back with a chance to win. But that defensive touchdown kind of sealed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, Justin said, like, Drake May really had no shot in that game. His offensive line was just getting torn up. And, I mean, it seemed like the Seahawks just lived in the backfield. Devon Witherspoon, Nick Emmanuel, those guys were just all over Drake May, and he just had no room to really do much at all.
Yeah, I agree. And we gotta hit these quick, guys. We got some basketball picks here. We gotta make room for we have to make room for SEC Sunday night. They're going tonight too at 8. But I picked some college basketball games for the upcoming week. I just took KenPom. I don't know what the lines are right now. I haven't looked at them for the one game that we have tonight, but you still have time tonight, 9 o'clock, probably the biggest game of the night, one of the biggest games of the week, quite honestly. You have undefeated Arizona traveling to Kansas. Storylines galore here. Kansas has never lost on Big Monday on ESPN. You know what their win percentage record is. and Fog Allen, Bill Self. I mean, at one point he had more seasons coached at Kansas than home losses, which is absolutely ridiculous. And it was like 15 to 20 seasons. But KenPom has this as Arizona winning by 3 points. The over-under is 144. Again, if you want to make a play tonight, you can get in before the 9 o'clock tip. Justin, what are your thoughts? And we'll wrap it around the horn with Alex as well.
Yeah, Arizona is undefeated in college basketball, maybe one of two or three teams left. This is a tough environment. I'm going to take Kansas here with the points, and I think Kansas pulls the upset here.
Alex?
Yeah, you know, I think it could come down to which Darren Peterson are you going to get. You're going to get the takeover Darren Peterson or, you know, just another version. Like, I'm going to go Arizona, I think, in this
one. Ooh, I'm the tiebreaker here. This is exciting. I'll be honest, I'm taking Arizona as well. And I'll tell you for one reason, offensive rebounding. Arizona is one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. Top two, I think, in their conference. And Kansas is putrid at offensive rebounding. Kansas only goes about seven players deep. Arizona has just been on a warpath this entire season. If I were to bet on this, I would 100% be taking Arizona. And if I lose, I'm okay with it because it's Fog Allen and it's Big Monday. It's ESPN. It's all those things. And I'll look like a fool for saying it. But I would take the over in this game, the over 144. Because if Kansas has any chance of winning this game, they're going to have to make their shots because they're not going to get offensive rebounds. And I don't know how well they can stop Arizona. So, all right, so we're kind of split there, but Alex and I both lean Arizona. The actual expert picked Kansas, so don't listen to me and Alex. tomorrow night, and I'm going to mix in some non-SEC games because when I looked at the SEC slate, there weren't, you know, massive games like there were in the past couple of weeks. But one of the big SEC games is Vandy at Auburn. This is tomorrow night. Auburn on KenPom is a 1-point favorite, over under of 163. Justin, what say you?
I'm going with the Fighting Nashvilles. I'm going to take Vanderbilt. I just don't trust this Auburn team. I was on them Saturday against Bama. I thought they would have beat Bama, and they did not. They've just been up and down, inconsistent, and Vandy's been very consistent in the right direction all year. I'm going to take Vandy here.
Now I don't know what to do with my picks. I was going the opposite way. Vandy's a little bit scary to me right now. That Oklahoma game looks close, but that game was not as close as the final score showed. Vandy really just came back and pressed and got Oklahoma to mess up late, but I'll go Auburn here. It's at home. It's at the Jungle. I think they found a way to get it done.
Yeah, I'm going to go Vandy plus one on this one. Just actually, Alex, you know, what they did to Oklahoma in that last 3 minutes and 20 seconds tells me they're never out of a game.
And it could be
Auburn's been kind of hit or miss for me. Another huge game here, Purdue at Nebraska. Nebraska is a 2-point favorite, over-under of 146. I think Purdue has the best point guard in college basketball. I think Nebraska might be the best team basketball team in the country, like just how they play off each other. You know, the sum is greater than the individuals, some synergies there. So, Justin, which way are you leaning here?
I want to take Nebraska, but my heart tells me to take Purdue. I just think Purdue's somehow pulls the upset here. It's not, I don't want to call it upset, but them getting points. I just like Purdue in this spot.
Yep. Alex?
I'll do the Lee Corso. Great pick. I'm going to go with Purdue here. You know, Nebraska, you know, it's crazy. They have not won an NCAA tournament game ever, which is just nuts to me with the season that they're having here. I think they get that done, but I think Purdue wins this game.
Yeah, let's make it 3-for-3. I do think that Purdue has taken their lumps. They've learned from it. They were pretty upset if you listen to their post game after they allowed Oregon to come back on them. I think Purdue is going to be on a mission here. And I do like Nebraska, though, but I just think Purdue has too much offense when it's all said and done. Back to the SEC on Wednesday night, we have Florida at Georgia. I was shocked when I saw this line on KenPom. And, you know, KenPom uses the adjusted efficiencies to make its predictions. But Florida -6. Over under 164. Justin, we'll start with you.
I'm taking the over here. I think they score 1,000 points, so I'm going to take the over.
Yeah, I was going to do the exact same thing. Yep. See, but especially the way Georgia plays that quick up-tempo, both teams do it, I go it over.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over 164 here. I think I'm just going to take Florida to cover until they don't because they're a machine right now. But Georgia can throw bodies at them, unlike a lot of other SEC teams. So maybe that's why we're seeing the six.
Real quick, Florida 14-1 right now. The win the national title. I like that. Really good value.
I do too. I don't know what Houston is. Houston's still my pick. But Missouri at Texas A&M. A&M's dropped two in a row, y'all. A&M has a pretty big week here. But they so this is Wednesday night. Texas A&M favored by 7 at home against Missouri, over-under of 157. Justin, does Texas A&M get back on the right track?
Yes, I like them here. I think they're a very good team. I like them. They should have beat Alabama. So I like A&M.
Same, coming off back-to-back losses, I think. And at home game, I think they get it done there.
Yeah, I think Missouri's due for a letdown, quite personally, because they should never have let Gamecocks get back in the game like they did.
Yeah.
Moving on to Saturday, we got four games here, and I promise we'll make way for SEC Sunday night. Purdue is back on the docket here. Purdue at Iowa. Iowa's a pretty daggum good team. Iowa minus 1 at home against Purdue, over-under of 143. Justin, we'll start with you.
I'm going to stay away from the side, but I'm going to take the over here. I think there's a bunch of points scored in this one.
I agree. That's right where I was going to.
Yeah, I'm over 143 as well. I don't know who's going to win that game. Going back to the SEC, Auburn at Arkansas. Auburn, another team with a big week coming up. Arkansas is minus 5, over-under 167. Ooh, Justin, what you think here?
I just don't trust Auburn. I like Arkansas at home. I just think they blow out Auburn.
I agree. I'm going to Arkansas minus 5. I think it's a game where it's maybe close at halftime, but the athleticism Arkansas has just runs away there.
Yeah, I probably like Arkansas as well. I also like the over here in 167. I think there's going to be a ton of points scored in this one. Kansas, another big one. Kansas at Iowa State. We're talking about both these teams for the second time. One of these teams is probably taking an L this week. One of these teams might be taking two L's. Iowa State minus 7 stood out to me. Iowa State's a really good basketball team. Over-under 143. Put it this way, I'll go first. I think Kansas goes 0-2 this week, but I do think they cover the 7 against Iowa State.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to take Iowa State here. I think this is a good spot for them. I think they have a chance to win it all this year. So I'm taking Iowa State minus 7.
Yeah.
All right, Texas A&M, big week for Texas A&M. They've had a big 2 weeks at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's a 7-point favorite, over under 163.
Let me go first. I like Vanderbilt here at home. I just think in their weird gym, they just have an edge there that a lot of people don't really talk about, and they just seem to play well there. So I'm going to take Vanderbilt, and I'm going to lay the points.
I'll go over 163. Two teams I think can put up a ton of points. I'll go over.
I'm going to take Texas A&M plus the 7. I like Vanderbilt a lot. I think Tyler Tanner, however you say it, is one of the best point guards in the country. But I do think A&M is going to find a way to get this one done. So I'll take the plus 7, but I wouldn't be surprised if Vanderbilt wins. All right, we have two more because we have to talk about South Carolina. But that's a joke. It's a joke. But Kentucky at Florida. This one's surprising. Florida is a bigger favorite against Kentucky than they are in the Auburn game we talked about. But the Georgia game. But Florida is a 10-point favorite at home against Kentucky, over under 152. Kentucky's playing pretty good basketball right now. Does Florida cover the 10 at home against Kentucky?
I don't know. This is a weird game. I don't know. Kentucky's just been hit or miss. But I do like the over here. I think they score here. Kentucky can shoot it. They get hot, I think they'll blow this 152 out.
Florida wins. Kentucky covers.
I got Florida by 20. Florida is going to beat the absolute crap out of Kentucky. It's going to be rowdy in there. I think Florida is going to blow them out. I'd probably take the over 152 if that's the case. But the last game we have to get to, it is the beloved Gamecock basketball team. They're traveling to Alabama. They have a week off, y'all. So they have a week off to kind of fix some things. Unfortunately, I don't think very many things are fixable at this point with the roster construction and the way the rotation has to play. KenPom has this Alabama minus 16, over under 166. What say you, Justin Lyles of SportsScoutValue.com?
Alabama minus 16.
I'll take the over.
I'm not going to pick the point spread because I got to do that on Saturday morning. I'll let this marinate a little bit. I'll let you guys just split there, or not even split, but you have a pick there on both sides.
Okay, how about this? Over under – Alabama scores 100 points.
Oh.
Over?
Yeah, yep.
I actually think the Charles Bediakis stuff didn't help Alabama. I think they'll play a lot better without him, to be honest. I mean, that was just such a sideshow. But I'll give you my pick on that game on Saturday. Make sure you follow all the socials. It's always on YouTube. It's on the Twitter account. So make sure you're following us there. I'll give my pick on that game Saturday morning. But, guys, we did it. We went through 10 games this week, so that's exciting. We're going to make sure we have you covered. We're going to have a big March Madness blowout episode where we'll pick all the games. We'll be on Selection Sunday to talk about the seedings. Unfortunately, the Gamecocks will not be in the NCAA tournament this year. Maybe they get a winning record and they get to the NIT or CBI or something like that. We hope so. We'll see what happens. But for Justin Lyle, Justin, actually, tell the folks where they can find you and how to take advantage of that promotion you have
running. Yes, sportscapvalue.com. Come check us out. Obviously, we still got the promo up. We'll keep it running. That's Gamecock, all capital letters. Go plug that in when you sign up for the monthly, and you'll get 3 free days. So I appreciate it, boys.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Justin, as always, for your time. Alex, make sure you get in touch with Tri-State. Tri-State wants to write for free. I'm sure that you can take some of the quota off of Alex. So Alex's social is right there, Alex_Jones45 on Twitter. Send some stuff to him. We'll see if anything can happen with it. Everyone, we really appreciate you being a part of the show tonight. When you give us your time, you give us the most valuable thing you have. So thank you. And we will be back Sunday night, back to regularly scheduled programming. And we'll have a lot to talk about, a lot to break down. So, Alex, thank you. Hope you have a good rest of the night. And we will see everybody Sunday.